Unit 14. Part 1. Frightening Experiences.
Brian, you've had some fairly horrifying experiences in your life, haven't you? I mean, having lived all over the world and things like that.
Yes, I've been in earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, seen tidal waves, volcanoes erupting, just about everything, all possible. Floods, all possible natural disasters. But I think the most frightening experience was being involved in a bus crash.
In this country?
No, this was in Africa, in a bus which was going through the countryside on a dirty road. It was a bus crowded with people, crowded with luggage, and the bus had stopped at a small town, at a bar, where the driver had a few beers, and then loaded a crate of beer on the bus on the roof rack. When we eventually set off from that place, the driver got up speed and suddenly ran off the road. I remember the bus turning over two or three times, and of grabbing hold of a handle, and eventually the bus came to rest upside down. All I could feel was a tremendous bang on the head, which later turned out to be the crate of beer. The only sound was of the engine still running.
People weren't screaming and things like that?
No. There was a dead silence. Absolute shocked silence. And it was a long way from any town or any village, and the only thing you could hear was the engine. The driver ran away into the bush. He was frightened. So what happened was, everybody crawled out through the back window and left their suitcases and possessions, and everyone was terrified the bus would explode. And eventually, someone had the sense to turn the engine off, and we all crawled back in again to get our possessions. And no one seemed particularly injured. Everyone was just shocked and stunned. And it was only after about 10 or 15 minutes of sitting on the ground that people began to collapse and become unconscious, and suddenly appear very seriously injured. Eventually, a lorry came and took us to the hospital, and it was only in hospital I realized just how serious it was. A girl sitting next to me on the bus was also sitting next to me in the hospital, and the nurse was asking her her age, her religion, etc. And suddenly, the girl just lay down and died, and three other people who'd been sitting near me also died. So I think, even though I've been in earthquakes and floods, that was the most frightening experience, being in the bus as it turned over and over.
1. Where did Brian have his most frightening experience?
2. What was the bus passenger's first response to the accident?
3. When did the bus passenger start to show signs of serious injury?
4. How many people were killed in the accident? Part 2. A Strange Experience. 1.
The night of Julia's strange encounter was wild and stormy. The rain beat against her windscreen, and the trees swayed in the wind as she drove home. There was no moon to lighten the lonely country lane, but occasional flashes of lightning lit up the sea far below, the waves crashing against the cliffs. Julia turned up the music on her stereo and wished she hadn't decided to drive back from the party on her own. It had been well after midnight when she left, but the other guests had shown no signs of leaving. She had decided to go, even though she had no very clear idea of the way home. It was the first time she had been to this friend's house, and now she was beginning to think she had taken a wrong turn. She was afraid she was lost. Suddenly, she slammed her foot on the brake. There was a large black object in the middle of the road blocking her way. She stopped just in time and saw two green eyes staring back at her, reflecting the beam of her headlights. Julia realized it was the largest cat she had ever seen. It just sat there, looking straight at her. What on earth was it doing in the middle of the road, and in a thunderstorm in the pouring rain in the middle of nowhere? Perhaps it was injured. Julia switched off the engine and picked up her torch. She got out and went up to the cat, but just as she shone her torch on it, the cat meowed, stretched, and walked off into the trees. Julia was both puzzled and annoyed as she got back into her car. She was wet through, though she'd only been out a few seconds. Oh well, she thought, at least I'm not completely alone on this road. She turned the key in the ignition. Nothing. The engine would not start. She tried again and again, but the engine was completely dead. Julia shivered. She was cold and wet, but she was also beginning to panic. She wondered what to do. Should she try to find a phone box? No, there didn't seem to be any sign of civilization near here. And besides, she would probably catch pneumonia if she went out into the rain again. She sat in the dark, listening to the rain drumming on the roof. She couldn't even listen to the radio now. She wrapped her coat round her and settled down to wait for morning. Gradually, she calmed down and began to feel sleepy. The rain went on and on. Suddenly, she sat up, wide awake. She realized the rain had stopped. She could only hear the beating of her heart. Why was she so afraid? Then she heard it. Someone was opening the passenger door. Julia screamed.
Part 3. A Strange Experience. 2. Are you lost? Said a gentle voice. Julia was too frightened to speak. A woman had opened the door of the car and was leaning in, looking at her kindly. She looked as if she was in her 40s, with long black hair and large, rather sad eyes. She was wearing a long blue overcoat, rather old-fashioned, Julia thought, with a bright red scarf wrapped tightly round her neck. Her hair and clothes were soaking wet, but Julia noticed that the rain had almost stopped, though the wind was still strong. The sky had cleared, and now the full moon shone down brightly. "Are you all right?" the woman said again. "Oh, yes, thank you," Julia stammered. "But my car won't start. Do you know if there's a phone box near here?" "Well," said the woman, "I'll take you to a house, and you can phone from there." Without waiting for an answer, she set off ahead, and Julia had to run to catch her up. The woman walked fast and said very little. After a few minutes, they came round a corner and saw a small cottage hidden in some trees. The woman walked straight up to the front door and knocked loudly. The house was quiet and dark. She knocked again. This time, a light went on upstairs. Julia heard someone coming down the stairs, and then the door was opened slowly by a gray-haired man in a dressing gown. "Yes," he said. "What do you want at this time of night?" Julia waited for the woman to speak, but suddenly she realized that the woman was not there. She must have walked off quietly as they were waiting for the man to open the door. "My car's broken down. I'm sorry to wake you up, but you see..." Julia didn't know quite what to say. "Come in, come in," said the old man. "It's not a night to be out in." As he spoke, Julia noticed that he was looking over her shoulder out into the night. It was as if he was expecting someone else. Julia went in. "There's no point in phoning anyone now," he said, before she could speak. "It's 4 in the morning, and besides, you look exhausted. You can sleep in the spare bedroom." Upstairs in the room, the man opened a wardrobe and pulled out a nightgown. "These are my wife's clothes," he said, "but they should fit you." As he closed the wardrobe, Julia glimpsed a bright red scarf hanging up. When he had left her, Julia opened the wardrobe again. Yes, there was the scarf hanging neatly over the shoulders of a long blue overcoat. Julia reached out her hand and touched them. They were wet. How strange, Julia thought. Just then, she saw a photograph standing on the bedside table. It was a picture of a woman. She was about 40, with long dark hair and large, sad eyes. "It's her," thought Julia. "She must be his daughter. But where did she go, and how did she manage to put her coat and scarf away?" Julia was too tired to think anymore. She got into bed and fell asleep. When she woke up, the sun was shining, and looking out of the window, she could see the sea was calm after the storm. Downstairs, in the kitchen, the old man was alone, making coffee. "Morning," he said. "Sit down and have some breakfast." "Thank you," said Julia. "I suppose it was your daughter who brought me here last night." "My daughter?" said the man. "No, I don't have any children."
"Then who's that in the photo upstairs?" said Julia.
"Ah," said the man, suddenly looking very sad. "That was my wife, God bless her. She disappeared 20 years ago. It was a stormy night, just like last night. She never came back. She must have slipped off the cliffs and drowned, but we never found the body. If only she hadn't gone out to look for William. I knew he'd be all right, though he was only small then."
"William?" whispered Julia.
"Ah, here he comes now," said the old man. The kitchen door swung open, and in walked an enormous black cat. It looked up at her, and Julia knew she had seen those green eyes before.
Part 4. The Supernatural. "Hi, Paul. What are you reading?"
"Oh, some draft article about a haunted house."
"What do you mean, daft?"
"Well, it's... I don't know. They've seen some ghosts there or something. I don't know."
"Well, where is it?"
It's just down the road, in Otley End."
"Well, it's old enough. What's wrong with that? There probably are some ghosts."
"Well, I don't believe in ghosts, frankly. Do you?"
"Well, yeah. I don't think we've got any proof that they don't exist. I mean, the number of people who've seen them, had experiences with them, I think it's a bit narrow-minded of you to say that there's no such thing."
"Oh, well, I mean, I've had no evidence. I've never seen a ghost myself, and until I do, I shan't believe in it."
"Well, Bruce, what about you?"
"I keep an open mind on it, really. If people firmly believe there's such things as ghosts, that's, up to them, but I would never, sort of, scoff the idea. I would never turn round and say, 'Oh, no, it's a load of rubbish,' until you get absolute proof one way or the other. You know."
"But you haven't seen one yourself."
"I've never seen a ghost, but, it doesn't mean to say, 'cause I haven't seen one, that there isn't such things. There's lots of things I haven't seen, but they are about."
"There's a friend of mine who's sort of spent all her life living with ghosts. I mean, I believe what she says, and she's got stories which don't just involve her, but, I mean, other people who've been involved with her ghost as well."
"I think people invent them. I think people want to believe in ghosts because their lives are so tedious, so boring, and etc., that they invent stories. I think it's a thing from the past when, you know, in the old days, people believed them because they don't have any scientific explanation for them."
"Yeah, but how..."
"It's like I said before, it's always difficult unless you can. I'm sure there are times when you can, give a reason for what people think is supernatural. It may not be at all, which, I agree with you on that, but I am convinced as well that there are times when the scientists can't give an adequate explanation why this happens, and that's the time when, you know, when I think, well, if you've got to believe them in that respect, so..."
"Yes, well, I think scientists will. I mean, you take thunder and lightning. In the old days, they thought that was the anger of the gods, right? Or take something like a magnet lifting up metal. I mean, it's amazing. It seemed like supernatural, but now there's a scientific explanation for it."
"But there are stories where you get people who, like yourself, who disbelieve them, and maybe even the scientists say, 'No, that's a load of rubbish,' and then something happens on some occasion somewhere with them where they completely change round the opposite, and they turn out to be believers."
"And there's also the idea that people who so strongly disbelieve in ghosts, I mean, It does seem a little bit narrow-minded, but it also seems like basically they're frightened to admit there's something beyond their control. You know, I mean, it could just be that you're just too frightened to admit that there's something there and you're not receptive enough, you know?
Well, that's your opinion. I shall continue to refuse to believe it until I have my own personal experience. Thank you.
Part 5. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. 6 people were injured in the store fire, and firefighters rescued at least 5 people trapped on the roof of the burning building, fire officials said.
2. I'm optimistic and hopeful that at the next round of talks, we will be able to announce a permanent ceasefire in the Middle East.
3. Their defense lawyer told the press that his clients had complained to him they had been tortured, assaulted, and intimidated. They required urgent medical examination.
4. The reform we proposed would result in tighter control over the sale of alcohol. We would not see it sold alongside grocery items, but rather displayed in a separate, clearly defined area.
5. With the help of a page torn from a primary school atlas, a former Vietnamese naval officer navigated a small boat to Australia as an illegal immigrant.
2. Passage Translation.
1. During the past 5 years, the number of Americans killed annually in car accidents has climbed to more than 55,000. The needless slaughter on streets and highways can be attributed to 3 general causes: mechanical failures, especially those related to faulty brakes and bad tires, account for a significant number of fatal accidents. Environmental conditions such as blind corners, narrow streets, heavy fog, intermittent rain or snow resulting in slippery roads also contribute to the accident statistics. But without doubt, the most frequently reported factors in car accidents are errors of human judgment, all the way from such follies as speed and drunken driving to such momentary lapses as failure to signal a turn or change from one lane to another. The man behind the wheel is often his own worst enemy.
2. In the years following World War II, the rate of population growth in the U.S. soared to an average level of 3.5 births per woman. By the 1970s, however, the birth rate was slowing down. In December 1972, the Census Bureau reported that it had dropped to about 2 births per woman, or what is called zero population growth. Even so, because there were many more women of childbearing age in the 1970s than there were in the 1950s, the Census Bureau estimated that by the end of the 20th century, America's population would reach 250 million.